This demonstrates one of our simpler methods. Realizing that our activities will sooner or later come to light, we structure our activities so that as conspiracy researchers unravel them, they will release information into the public consciousness in such a way that it mirrors our initiatory procedure. In this way, the more we are investigated, the more masses of people are psychologically processed by the very people who seek to expose us. The meme that constitutes our essential structure is then successfully mimicked within the consciousness of those who investigate us. Success can then be measured precisely to the extent that our work is exposed. This week's opening quote comes from the revelation of the method and the making a manifest of all that is hidden, Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare by Michael Hoffman. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Well, folks, can the world get much crazier? I guess that is the question, and I suppose it can, because it certainly isn't stopping anytime soon. That's the way it seems anyway. And I did want to present a show about history this week, but the world events just seem to not let up and to demand my attention all the time. There's just so much going on. I'm going to try to fit some history in, but there's just so much going on in the world that needs to be discussed, that I thought I'll just touch on a few topics to begin the show with and see where we end up. As we can see, and very predictably, something that I said was going to happen after Christchurch, the United States government, well, the FBI, has just announced that conspiracy theorists are potential terrorists. Of course, this is riding off the back of the recent shootings in the United States, which have been designed in such a way as to kind of mimic what happened at Christchurch. And not in as much as they are shooting up a mosque and shooting up religious areas, but just in the mentality and the mindset behind the shootings. Well, the mindset that's being promoted by the media as being the mindset behind the shootings anyway, which is definitely not the case, but they want to push this agenda because it suits their narrative to do so, and we can see how this has all been building up. Interesting, the shooting at Walmart, we have reports of 3 or 4 shooters, and then, of course, the reports are reduced to a lone white supremacist, not, of course, the way the media always does it, because it suits their agenda to play it that way. And you notice it's also been referred to as a hate crime. Isn't that interesting, folks? Whenever it's a Muslim who carries out any type of activity and shoots a whole bunch of people, or if it's someone with brown skin, they'll just call him a Muslim. Even if he's not a Muslim, they'll just say that he is. And in such a case, it's always classed as an act of terrorism. And yet if it's a white person who does it, it's not an act of terrorism. It's classed as a white supremacist hate crime. You notice the difference in that, folks, the slight shift in rhetoric and the subtle NLP that's involved in that, so they can push this fear of Muslims on one hand, this fear of terrorism from anybody who doesn't abide by what the West says they should do on one hand, and yet anybody white who carries out the crime, they can push it as a hate crime and also whip up sentiment against white people. So they get you to hate the Muslims on one hand, get you to hate the white people on the other hand, and it's all part of the same government agenda, all pushing towards the same ultimate goal. You see, they really have to get you to believe that the average white guy next door is a real problem and someone that may be a real threat to society, because it's the average white people next door that they really want to get rid of, and they want to disarm the people. And so they have to promote all of these so-called terrorists as being someone that you would never have expected to do this, just a normal average guy next door. Oh my God, we didn't see it coming. Of course, the only way to prevent this happening again is to remove all the guns from the people. It's like that saying, you know, the proverb that says there was a bunch of sheep and they saw a wolf come along and kill another one of their sheep. And so the sheep looked at it and they thought, oh my God, we've just realized that teeth can kill sheep. So in fear of this ever happening again, the sheep went and removed all of their own teeth. It's much like that, folks. And of course, they did it in El Paso, Texas, because that way they can attempt to tie it in with the Trump rhetoric about immigrants, and they can make it all about immigration when it really wasn't. The whole thing was very obviously staged to attempt to push the gun control agenda forward in the United States. This is what we also saw in Dayton, Ohio, with another shooting in Dayton, Ohio. this particular Patsy was very likely a MK Ultra mind control victim, or at very least someone who is very likely groomed to perform this activity by the FBI. Many of these people that we see do these things are groomed and talked into performing these activities by the agencies themselves, which has actually been people in the United States that have caught the FBI attempting to train and program their children in order to, of course, further the United States gun control agenda. They're really trying to push this. And as I said a few shows ago or a couple of months ago, they're not really going to be able to do it through mass shootings in the United States the way they've done. I mean, that always helps, but they're not going to be able to do it the way they have done in Australia and New Zealand with Christchurch. But after Christchurch and Brenton Tarrant's manifesto, you could see that the next move was to claim that conspiracy theorists and alternate media personalities are in fact potential terrorists and are influencing people to carry out terror activities. This is something that I predicted they were going to do as soon as Christchurch happened. I said, this is what we're going to see in the United States. They're going to do it through legislation. And the thing is, they exposed themselves so badly with the operation that they ran in Christchurch that we can see why everything is snowballing so quickly since that event. They've got to lock people down, folks, before people get a grip of what actually happened there and how much they are actually exposed by the shooter's video. So they've really got to push things forward, and they've really got to make the independent media seem like we are just completely crazy nuts who are a danger to the rest of society. They've got to push that into the minds of the population, otherwise this situation is going to completely fall apart. If people really get a grip on what we've been saying, they're going to lose control of the ship of state altogether, and so they really need to push that into the minds of the people, folks. They need to convince the world that we're all nuts and we're all potential terrorists. That actually anybody who speaks out against the government at all is a potential terrorist. And this is what we've seen happen and unfold with this El Paso shooting and with the shooting in Dayton, Ohio as well. And interesting, folks, I mean, if conspiracy theorists are potential terrorists, then I guess that means that the entire United States government, all the officials that reported on 9/11 are potential terrorists as well, because the official 9/11 narrative is in fact a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy because it talks about more than one person, talks about 19 hijackers, and it's a theory because it's never ever been confirmed. And you may think that it has been confirmed, but no, it hasn't, folks. We were told that's what happened, but there has never, ever been one single shred of evidence presented to the public to actually confirm the theory that it was carried out by Osama bin Laden and that 19 Arabs with plastic box cutters were able to bring down three buildings in New York with two aircraft. This is simply a theory that was presented to the world and sold to the world, but it is essentially a conspiracy theory which is yet to be proven. And as I said, folks, this is a conspiracy theory which has been promoted and pushed by the United States government and by the entire world media. So I guess that makes all of the United States government and many other governments and the entire world media potential terrorists under the FBI's new guidelines. Think about it. Interesting that they would have that type of double standard. I guess conspiracy theories are okay as long as they're coming from official sources and not from anybody who actually is able to think. Very interesting double standard they would display, but of course what we would expect from any alphabet agencies within the United States, or indeed anywhere within the World Intelligence Services. They always like to state things precisely backwards, folks. We are seeing much the same backward procedure of stating facts in Australia with the Australian government as well. We've seen recent legislation drafted which is suggesting the outlawing of any cash transactions over $10,000. This has been done, according to the government, to clean up the black budget, but really it's being done in order for the government to be able to steal more from the people, because that's basically what politicians do. They just think up more creative ways of milking the population of their wealth. And this is all moving towards a complete ban on cash. That's what Scott Morrison would like to do. And a ban on cash, you know, a war on cash is essentially a war against freedom. It's a war against people. This is something that I discussed last week, but they're really trying to push this, folks. So it's important that people start using cash as much as they can and sticking to cash transactions in every transaction that they can, folks. I mean, you really don't want to be using all of this digital stuff. You want to be really pushing this and making sure the government is not able to ban cash, because if they do, it will mean the end of freedom. And what they're attempting to do with this, folks, really essentially is lock people into the banking system. And if you look at what the banking system is doing, you look at what the world financial system is doing, what the Australian government is doing through all this is they are setting the population up in order to be able to steal what wealth they have from them. Yeah, if we get to a situation where there is some sort of a major financial crash and there is a bail-in, then the banks will effectively steal everybody's savings that they have in the bank. Yeah, this is the way it goes, folks. When you invest your money in a bank, when you put your money into a bank to save it, the bank considers you to be a shareholder and you have invested in their bank. And so if the bank goes down and crashes, then it uses all of the people's savings in order to save the bank. That's the mentality they use. I mean, you don't want us to go down because we've got all your money, and so you won't be able to survive without us. So we need to do everything we can to save the bank. And so we need to steal all of your money, when the reality is that we don't even need the bank. We could be keeping our own money in our own crypto wallets or just buried as gold in the backyard or whatever, folks. The banking system itself is designed to steal wealth from the people, and that's the way it's going. They're even talking about a possibility of negative interest rates here in Australia, which means you will soon be paying the bank interest in order to keep your money in the bank. So what you really should be doing, folks, is pulling your money out of the banks if you live in Australia, put it out of the bank and turn it into gold and go bury it somewhere or put it in a vault or something. But turn it into real money, which is gold and silver, and not all of these digital credits and fiat notes and all of this stuff that they give us to play with, because all of it devalues and all of it is designed to steal your wealth from you. And this is something that I've often pointed out to people. You know, if you even look at gold, you look at the concept of gold and the value of gold, gold doesn't actually change in value. You know, an ounce of gold is an ounce of gold, and it's still worth what an ounce of gold is worth. And to really put that into a perspective, the fact that gold does not change value and items do not change value. What changes in value is the money itself. The fiat currency that we use as money changes in value because of what the bankers do to it. And to illustrate this point, you can look at it and think, well, 100 years ago, I could walk into any reputable store, a good department store, and I could walk into that store with 1 ounce of gold. And I could buy myself a nice suit, a good quality suit, a good quality hat, and a good quality pair of shoes with that ounce of gold. And now I can still walk into any department store, and for the value of 1 ounce of gold, I can still buy myself a good quality suit, a good quality hat, and a good quality pair of shoes. The suit, the hat, and the pair of shoes have not changed in value. The gold has not changed in value. What has changed in value is the currency, the money, the fiat. Because with 1 ounce of gold, I can still buy today what I could buy 100 years ago. The difference is that 100 years ago, that ounce of gold was worth about $3. And now that same ounce of gold is worth about $1,500. But the gold itself buys me exactly the same today as what it bought me 100 years ago. So the gold has not changed in value. Money has not changed in value. The items have not changed in value. It's just that what we perceive to be money is not money. It's promissory notes. It's fiat currency issued by bankers and issued in such a way as to steal all the wealth from the people and enslave them into a situation of permanent self-generating debt. And that's what they're attempting to do in Australia here with this move towards the banning and outlawing of cash, folks. It's all been designed in such a way as to lock people into the banking system, lock them into a bail-in, and steal their wealth from them, leading further towards a two-caste society. We have the ruling elites, and we have the others. And, of course, the twain shall never meet, and the twain are separated by the wall of brutal ignorance, which is the Australian police force, or the police force of any Western countries, who are generally a bunch of ignorant fools, bereft of empathy, trained to be as brutal as possible, and are all working to support the politicians under the pretext of actually supporting the law and preventing crime. You know, many of them actually think this is what they're doing, but they're not. They're just basically a guard force for these psychopaths who are running the country. And it is these psychopaths who stage all of these events, folks. I mean, even if the shootings, like, you know, the shootings we see in the United States, even if this just was some young crazy guy who went and shot all these people, it's because he was programmed to do it, or he was groomed to do it. He was given the intention to do it by the authorities, because it all leads towards the same agenda. You know, people just don't go and shoot up schools, folks. People just don't go and shoot up shopping centers. They just don't go and shoot up all these places and kill innocent people. It just doesn't happen. You know, not unless they're trained to do it or groomed to do it or programmed to do it in some way. And it always supports the same agenda. I mean, you think about it. You know, even what we're told in El Paso, this is apparently some guy who is a white supremacist. So why did he go to a Walmart and shoot up all these white people? You know, it just doesn't make sense. Nothing that they give us makes sense. Nothing that they ever tell us makes sense. And it's all designed for the same thing. You can look through the history of stuff that's actually declared by governments, and you can find literally dozens upon dozens of false flag events that have been carried out by governments in the last 100 years, all openly admitted by them. And think about what they don't admit. And I actually did a show about this a few months ago called A Brief History of Government-Sponsored False Flag Terrorism. Of course, YouTube recently deleted it as being against community guidelines, even though everything that I put on the video clip was openly admitted by government. You can go and read it on government websites yourself. And as I said, folks, normal people just don't go and shoot up a shopping center full of people, not unless they're programmed to do it. You might think, oh, well, of course they don't. Normal people don't, but terrorists like Brendan Tarrant and terrorists like this guy in El Paso and this guy in Dayton, Ohio, these aren't normal people. But the point is, folks, that these people are not just guys in society who just got pissed off one day and decided to go and shoot up a bunch of people. They were programmed to do it. And in all of these events, you've got to look at who benefits, and it's always the same. It's always the government who benefits. And it's all pushing towards the same agenda. And we can see how this gun control rhetoric has been such a main theme in the United States government for so many years now. It should be blatantly obvious to everybody that's able to think in even the slightest way that all of these events are staged. Now, regardless of whether people die or not, regardless of whether it's a lone shooter or not, which generally never is, but regardless of any of that, all of them are staged, all of them are planned, and if you really look deep enough, you're going to find that there's an alphabet agency in there somewhere. It's always the case, folks. In every single one of these events we've investigated, we've always found links to the FBI, links to the CIA, links to government in some way, shape, or form. It's always there. You just have to look, and it always is moving towards the same agenda. One thing I will say for Trump in the face of all of this is that at least it is good to see he is not supporting the gun control rhetoric, and he is not pushing to implement any type of gun reform in the United States. I mean, that would be an extremely dangerous thing for anybody to do. Though I believe he is changing the screening process, and he's making it a little bit more difficult for people to obtain firearms. So he's not completely against gun reform. He's kind of doing it in a subtle way, trying to keep the party happy and trying to keep the people happy at the same time, I would say. He's a hard guy to figure out. He really is, you know, because he does this sort of stuff in the United States, but then he completely destroys the rest of the world while he's doing it. You know, he's put all those ridiculous sanctions against Venezuela, caused an enormous amount of hardship for those people, and he's just frozen all the assets the other day as well. Frozen all Venezuelan assets within the United States. He seems really determined to starve any innocent people and any peasants or any paupers, anyone who really can't afford to live properly. He really seems determined to push them over the limit and make sure they're left with no other option than commit suicide or die. And he seems to be very determined to kill as many children as he can in Iran through sanctions as well, while supplying massive amounts of weapons to the Saudi Arabians so they continue the genocide of the children of Yemen and continuing to support Israel in its genocide of Palestine. So he's a hard one to figure out. He's someone who seems to look at the entire world through the eyes of a businessman rather than the eyes of a human being. But as I said, it is at least good to see that he is not supporting the gun reform rhetoric within the United States. But of course, if he was to do so, he would be guilty of treason anyway and guilty of abuse of office, because one of the things the president is supposed to do is to uphold and protect the Constitution. And it does, of course, say in the Constitution that the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. So he's doing that, and he's supporting it in that way. But then on the other hand, you can see that he's also supporting the whole concept that what we just saw in El Paso and in Dayton was, in fact, a hate crime. So he's pushing the hate crime rhetoric. He's pushing kind of both sides of the fence. It's very, very interesting to see the way he's playing things. So he's a very, very shrewd businessman, Donald Trump. He always makes sure to throw the truth community a bone in whatever he's doing, and he genuinely does seem to be wanting to support the US Constitution in many ways, but again, he's unfortunately looking at the world from a business perspective, which is a completely demented way to look at anything, because this whole business model is all complete fiction, and it's really the problem. It's what's led us into this whole smart system that we're leading into now. You know, the whole business economic system is what is being used to control us. It's what's being used to limit our potential with social crediting and lock us into this smart grid and control every action and every aspect of our lives. So, you know, there's two ways of looking at all of this, folks. That's the thing with Donald Trump. You know, he does address some real issues, but he's doing an enormous amount of damage to the world while he does it, and he doesn't address the actual core issues. You know, the real issues that would lead to human freedom anyway. These seem to be put far off on the back burner and in a dark corner somewhere where no one will notice them, and it's the same with all politicians, folks. They simply don't look at the world through clear enough eyes. Or maybe they do. Maybe they see it, and maybe they just do what they can to make sure others don't. But, you know, a lot of the rhetoric they push, it is nothing that's ever going to lead to freedom anyway. As I've said so many times, folks, we're not going to find any remedy in politics. The whole political system is a complete joke, and it's designed to be that way. And to tie us up in all this rhetoric and make us actually think that it means something and make us actually think that we're making a difference by voting and supporting different candidates and different puppets that they put up there, but essentially every single one of them is a puppet. And you can tell because, as I said, folks, they just don't address the real issues. No one now addresses the fact that this economic system is in fact the slavery system. No one's addressing the fact of where this smart grid is leading us. No politician on earth is addressing the incredible damage that's going to be done by this 5G system that's rolling out. In fact, they're all pushing it forward, and they're all supporting the same rhetoric. We've even got the Australian government here saying now that they're considering the option and the possibility of sending battleships to the Persian Gulf to support any action that the United States wants to wage there. Yeah, that's still on the cards as well, folks. You know, that's another thing with Trump. I mean, he's still pushing this rhetoric towards Iran, and he seems very much like he would like to have a war with Iran, even though he's saying he doesn't want to do it. He's doing everything he can to make sure it does happen. So that's an interesting thing as well. I just think he's a very, very shrewd businessman. Wouldn't even surprise me if Trump was who set up the whole Q thing just to keep a lot of the conspiracy theorists and the independent media contained and make them think that something is actually about to happen. When the whole Q thing is simply theatre for the masses, folks, it's kept people sitting there waiting for 2 years, waiting for something to happen, waiting for this big event, which of course is never going to happen, but it certainly has kept people contained, and I think that was its purpose all along. To keep people contained, to also identify all the people that are hanging on to every word that Q is saying, and to roll the whole thing into this censorship move they're making in a way of identifying all the members of the truth community and claiming that they're all terrorists. And come October, they'll probably attach it all to the hoax meme as well, and we'll see a huge push to shut down the independent media. And they've done it in such a way as to make it all believable and just to make it all flow the way they want it to flow, by attaching the correct type of conspiratorial and pseudo-intellectual ambience to the entire operation. More theatre for the masses, folks, and when you consider what I outlined in the opening quote, it was outlined by Michael Hoffman, in as much as so much of the independent media has been designed to actually release information for the powers that believe they be in order to set the correct psychological mindset for people, in order for people to be able to even accept what is being rolled out at random through predictive programming. You've got to wonder what the whole Q thing is really all about and what the purpose has been in the whole thing. Now, what has it really achieved? You know, it's really got a lot of information out to people, nothing that we didn't already know. You know, I've really learned nothing from the whole Q dumps or the Q drops, whatever they call them. It's just stuff that we already know. Same as what we saw with the release from Edward Snowden. Same as what we saw with releases from WikiLeaks. It's all stuff that we already knew. Although, you mean, yeah, there was evidence that was put there to confirm things, such as the collateral murder video that was put out by Julian Assange that was released by Bradley Manning. So these sorts of things, I mean, this was confirmation for us, as I said, but you've got to look at all of this and realize that it's a way of, as was said, making manifest all that is hidden in order for the public to be led into the reality they want to lead them into. You really got to look at how all this has been put together, folks, and wonder how many times it's been done before. This is when you start looking at this sort of stuff and you can apply the situation that we're in today to the history of the world, and you can question whether this has been done many, many times. Is that why the legends exist? The legends of the scrying mirrors and the beast system and 666, which we see clearly outlined in the Google logo. This is something else that I pointed out a couple of months ago as well, or a month or two ago. The fact that the Google logo is actually made up of three sixes. You know, like, there's so much predictive program that's been put out there, and the whole concept of the scrying mirrors and the concept of the end times and all of this stuff, is it simply a reoccurring cycle that happens time and time again? And is this one of the reasons they've removed our history from us? And again, how easy would it be to hide history, folks? Well, how long would it take? It would only take one generation to hide history, especially if you repopulated the world with children. And in the world that we've got today, and there's very few people that are even interested in history. Well, people may be interested in it, but they simply don't have time to look because they're too busy running on the treadmill. And as we see this economic system become more and more retarded, in as much as retarding human ability to function, which is what it's doing, you know, as the price of everything goes up, we have to run harder and harder on the treadmill in order to meet the everyday needs of life, in order to collect the credits we need to pay to be alive. So we don't really get a chance to look at this. And when most people do look at history and they try to figure out what's going on, they go to academic circles and they go through that method. They never really think about what it would mean if it was all wrong, and what it really means to be a human being, what it would really mean to be completely free of this economic system, you know, to even imagine a time where there wasn't an economic system, which is a really alien thing for many people to think about. Many people cannot even imagine a world without money, how the world could possibly function without money. Well, the world that we got now would not function without money, but this world that we've got now is not anything that serves humankind at all. That's the problem. Just many people cannot see that because they cannot imagine anything different simply because of what they've grown up into. You know, better the devil you know, and the familiarity of the system. You know, people don't really have to think about their lives too much. You know, even if we think we are heading into a system where we're all becoming automatons, enslaved to AI and becoming little drones, in many ways we already are, ladies and gentlemen, because we don't think about our own survival in any real type of way. The only way we really think about our survival is how many credits we can achieve and collect so that we can go and buy things from supermarkets and buy all the stuff that we think we need, which we don't. And none of it is about life. None of it is about us. That's when history becomes important. And when you look at that, that's why you can sort of start tying in the stuff that's happening today with our history and the fact that our history has been stolen from us. And you can begin to understand why our history has been stolen from us. And I'll attempt to get into this a little bit more after the break. But I think we have reached break time here, folks. I better leave it there for now. We'll go have a break. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, so as I was saying before, you know, thinking about how people are molded and programmed into committing these atrocities that we see in the world today, you know, it isn't even always that someone is singled out by the FBI or the CIA and they're approached and they're trained and convinced to carry out these activities. Very often it's the society itself which paves the way for this to happen. You know, it creates that environment, it creates that mindset in people, and it puts them into a state where they're easily molded and easily convinced to carry out these atrocities, and it may not even be through direct contact. But it's very easy to influence certain people to do certain things if they've grown up in a certain way. And we have societies that are designed to ensure that people do grow up in certain ways and grow up developing certain problems and certain mental issues. You know, it's a treatment that they receive from other people within the society, all of which is programmed into them. You know, we've got societies which are designed to separate people. You know, all of the breakdown of the family unit, the amount of single mothers that we see. So kids grow up without a father figure, so they grow up with a chip on their shoulders. And everything is always about looks and about social status and about whether you've got the latest iPhone or the latest fashions or whatever. And if you don't, then you're very often ostracized by your peers and you become an outcast through the scholastic system. And this, of course, also supports the government's divide and conquer agenda and also supports their radicalization of people, their radicalization of people's thought. The radicalization of the way people act towards other people. Because what happens when people are ostracized by their peers and they feel like they never fit in, sometimes they get angry about it and sometimes they just want to hurt people because they think it's the only thing that's going to bring them any type of attention. You know, a lot of serial killers, you'll find that they did these things because they wanted their face out there. They wanted public attention because they never got any attention when they were a kid. There's a very profound African proverb that says, if the child is not embraced by the village, the child will burn the village down in order to feel its warmth. And it's a very, very profound proverb, and it's a very, very true statement about human nature. And if you look at our recent history, it becomes quite apparent that our societies have been designed to create this type of a mindset. You know, everything about our societies is designed to move us away from any real form of consciousness, any real form of enlightenment, any real way of connecting with the self and discovering the truth about the self, discovering the truth about the world. You know, and again, through the loss of our history, this has happened. And in modern times, just in modern history, in the last 100 years, we've seen it absolutely snowballing. And I think a lot of what was in place in the world before what we would probably turn to be the last cataclysm, the mud flood or whatever happened to destroy the culture that once existed here and replace it with this psychopathic system that we now have, I would suggest that much of it was centered around consciousness and centered around the expansion of consciousness. And this is really made apparent if you can just look at some of the artifacts and some of the documents and some of the things that have been left behind for us. If you just look at them through the right type of eyes, you begin to see this, but it does require a complete re-examination of history and what we think about history. What we think history even is. That's the problem, you know. We've only got these mainstream academic versions of history, these mainstream academic timelines that have been given to us. And it should be reasonably apparent to anybody who's put time into it that the official narrative that we're given is quite provably wrong. And not only is it wrong, it's not wrong because people have simply made mistakes and got the idea wrong and gone in the wrong direction. You know, and as much as many people may not want to admit it, there comes a point where you have to realize that the reason it's so wrong is because it's been deliberately falsified. And that's a reasonably uncomfortable reality for many people to come to terms with. They can't imagine why it would have been done, but the fact is that this is what has been done. And this is completely confirmed by anybody who actually takes the time to travel around the world and simply observes that which they see. Because quite literally none of what we see around the earth can be explained by the currently accepted academic narrative of history. Now, with recent discoveries and recent observations that have been made by people, observations of buried buildings, observations of what we're calling the mud flood, for want of a better name, that we're finding evidence of all around the world, the existence of the once great nation of Tartaria, which seems to have encompassed most of the known world, I mean all of Russia and Mongolia and certainly all of Europe and parts of America and possibly even parts of the Philippines and Australia were all part of this nation, a nation which has been expunged from history books. The evidence that was discovered by Attila Flink in the Macquarie Library in Australia, where he traced the root language of the Australian people and of the Polynesians and Melanesians and many other people to Magyar, and effectively identified a worldwide root language that once existed not too long ago. The evidence that has surfaced of the orphan trains, the foundlings, the enormous amount of human trafficking and transportation of children that was happening in the late 1800s. And really astronomical figures, folks, like something like 635,000 children trafficked around Europe in 1 year, 200,000 children sent across the United States from east to west, 100,000 children sent out to Australia, to New Zealand, to Africa. I mean, all of these sorts of things exist in the public record, and all of this indicates a very, very different world and a very, very different history to the history that we're told. You know, if we look at the currently accepted version of history, you know, England went out and colonized all these places and the settlers and the convicts and all this sort of stuff, where do you factor in these orphans? Where do you factor in this enormous amount of children that was moved around the world in the late 1800s? Where did they all come from? And why were they so intent on sending children everywhere? Where are the adults? Where were the parents of all of these children? These are very interesting questions. This is something that I talked about on a show, I think, around about November last year. I put out a show called History is a Lie, We've Been Set Up. That show actually got something like 580,000 views in 2 weeks and 8,500 comments. And then YouTube disabled all features on the video. And about a month ago, they deleted the video altogether for being in breach of community guidelines, of course. And after I released that video, incidentally, I also got hacked. My computer got hacked and all of my hard drives were deleted. So I found it to be quite interesting that that would happen after I published that video regarding the orphan trains and the fact that history has been completely fabricated. And we are, as I said in that video, actually being set up. If you look at cities and you look at what's happened to humanity, how our life skills have been taken from us and we've been packed into these cities, which are essentially mass dependency zones. And that's what a city is. I mean, a city creates an environment whereby you are completely dependent upon the infrastructure provided by the city for your survival. If anything happens to interrupt the flow of that infrastructure, interrupt the arrival of the food trucks or interrupt the electricity or whatever, it suddenly becomes a very, very different world. And I suggested that cities are actually traps that people have been corralled into. And these are basically designed to be depopulation centers. You know, cities may well connect people and provide conveniences for people in many ways, but they also isolate large sections of population from other large sections of population. Now, cities are very self-contained, and they become even more so with the advent of the ring roads that you're seeing now being built around major cities all through the United States, through Europe, through England, and through Australia here as well. Large ring roads that they say make it convenient for you to be able to simply circumnavigate the city, go around it and get in from various points. What you also notice that as they provide these large ring roads, they remove the other exits and entrances to the area, and it just becomes about the large freeway entrances and exits. And you might get half a dozen or a dozen or 20 of these main exits around a major city. And this means that there's only 20 ways in and 20 ways out, and it's easy to block off these major intersections to block off all flow of traffic in and out of the area. You notice that the large highways have had huge walls built along the length of the highways. They tell us this is to keep traffic noise down, but of course it also contains the people within these areas. And should the authorities want to lock down these cities, it would be easy to simply block off all of these major intersections, and suddenly you have very effectively contained all of the population within these areas. You know, as I've said so many times, when you look at all of this stuff, it becomes incredibly apparent that we're being set up. You know, what is being presented to us as convenience is not really convenience. It's a smart prison system, which is going to be monitoring everything we do. And the cities have been designed to contain the people within the cities. They make it very difficult for people to go and live outside of the cities. And what they're doing with our communication system as well is they're digitizing everything, as well as our monetary system, digitizing everything. And you've just seen what they've done with Venezuela, frozen all of Venezuela's assets. Well, that's what they can do to you once it becomes all digitized. If you say anything outside the government agenda, say anything that isn't approved by the government or step outside the lines in any way, they can simply freeze your assets. And you are stuck at that point. You have nowhere to go. Now, when it's all digital, it'll be even more so because you'll find you won't even be able to enter your house or start your car or access anything or go in any place that requires digital entry. And you're going to find that pretty well everywhere will soon require digital entry. And they'll do this via the fear of terrorism. Where they're trying to scan people and, you know, you've got to show ID and go through metal detectors and all sorts of stuff and massive security just to enter some buildings in the United States now. And soon, through the fear of terrorism, they'll be able to make it so that you've got to go through security and body scans and all sorts of stuff simply to enter a shopping center. I mean, this is the way they plan on taking it all, folks, and it all results in a complete loss of self, in a complete loss of any real spirituality, a complete loss of any connection to what it means to be human. And this is one of the things that is so apparent in the civilization that was here before. You know, if you start looking into things such as Tartaria and stuff that existed before the mud floods, you find a civilization which seemed to place spirituality and consciousness right up at the pinnacle, right up there at the highest of achievements and something to be the main focus of the society. It very much seems this way. You know, as I mentioned last week, some of the work that's been discovered that shows that many of the depictions of the statues in ancient Egypt are actually depicting brain stems. There's even been someone who's identified a picture of a brain stem in the Sistine Chapel, in the neck of God on the Sistine Chapel. Someone has identified that Michelangelo actually painted a brain stem in there. Why would he do that if consciousness wasn't a focal point? This is the thing, folks. All of the old societies that we had seem to really place a lot of attention on the power of consciousness and the power of human achievement and the power of the human mind and the power of human spirituality and what we could do with that, and which is why we are being led into a system which is externalizing all of that. You know, even our quest for spirituality is being externalized. It's becoming all about technology, all about machines. The whole AI system we're being led into, all of our life skills being removed from us, everything that it means to be human is being removed from us, and we're being moved into this machine culture. And in order to stop it, all we really have to do is reconnect with our humanity. That's the thing. Yeah, and when you can really start to look at this ancient culture that was here and see the focus that they put on spirituality and the focus that they put on the human brain and on the human mind and what we're actually capable of, it really is very revealing, folks. And it's kind of daunting. You know, a lot of people in the modern world don't even want to look at this stuff. They think, well, if we're that far removed from what we were, then why even look at it, because we're never going to get back. We might as well just go in the direction that we're going now. And they want to embrace this technology. It just seems to be something that people are really looking forward to. It's a strange thing, but I would suggest that the reason why people are looking forward to it and why people are embracing technology so much is because of that telepathic concept, that concept of connection they can get from it, because it's such a real concept. It's something that we take to like a fish to water, because it's something that we're able to do with our inner technology if we simply had access to this inner technology. That's why all this external technology seems so appealing to us, because it's second nature to us to have this communication, to have this connection to all that is. It's second nature for us. It's the way we're supposed to be. And it's been taken from us, and that's why we are attracted to it so much. We're attracted to the fake version of it so much, because we simply don't realize what's been stolen from us. It's as I've said sometimes in the past, you know, if I've got a Honda that I want to sell you and you're a Lamborghini driver, you're not very likely to buy my Honda. But if I steal your Lamborghini and you still have to get to work and you still have to do things, then you're far more likely to buy my Honda from me. And that's what they've done. They've stolen our Lamborghini, and we simply don't know that it's been taken. And that's why we have such a hard time with our spiritual concepts and trying to find the path of spirituality, because we don't know the way, because it's never been shown to us, and we don't realize what's been stolen from us. You know, and if you don't know what's been stolen from you, how do you ever know what it is that you're searching for? Yeah, and this is a lot of what is wrong with a lot of the kids today, that they are missing the attention that they needed when they were children, because it was stolen from them, because their parents were stolen from them, because their parents were forced to work, and so they didn't really grow up with parents. I grew up with a television as a parent, teaching them what to think and how to think. And so they never developed that real bond with their parents that they should have developed, and so they never really got the attention they deserved, and so now they go out and they spend their life on Instagram and Snapchat and Facebook trying to get likes because they desperately want that attention that they never got when they were a child. And they don't even know that's what they're searching for, because they don't realize that's what was stolen from them. You know, human beings and human psychology is very, very complex, and it becomes easy to see how we create the reality that we are creating ourselves simply by the way we are molded and the way we are trained to think. There's a real danger of that, even with this whole truth community and resistance and conspiracy culture. There's a real danger in it of training people to create the reality that the powers that believe they be want the people to create. You know, we look at all of these things and we use them as pressure relief valves. It all becomes okay for us to do this. You know, we see something happening in the world, something really bad, and we go, oh, well, we know that's the way it is, and we just carry on. We don't actually do anything about it. You know, we know all the priests are pedophiles, but we just say, oh, yes, we know they're pedophiles, and we go back to work. We don't pick up pitchforks and go to the church and pull them out and take them out and do the right thing. We know the politicians are corrupt, but we say, oh, yes, we just expect politicians to be liars and we allow them to do it. It's just all okay. We just accept it and we carry on with our lives because we think that's just the way it is. Now, that's a lot of what this culture has done. It has taught us to accept corruption all around us and to believe that we can't do anything about it, to believe that these people are all powerful when they're not. They're just people. And very often they're people that we employ to manage infrastructure for us and act in a responsible manner, and they don't do it. And we continually allow ourselves to stay outside our moral compass rather than doing the right thing in all of these situations. You know, this is something that I've addressed so many times on the air. You know, if we were to simply stand in our moral compass and stand up and say, no, enough is enough, and realize that what we're dealing with here is just people, then we could change the world in a day. But we don't. We allow it all to continue, and we're just okay with it, and we just accept it, and we go back to work, and then we pretend nothing's going on. It's ridiculous, folks. You know, if we were in our divinity, we would change things in a day. You know, we would see a problem and we would say, well, we need to fix the problem. You don't petition someone and ask them if they will please do something about the problem. We fix the problem. You know, but we don't do that. We just accept it. We move on. We be politically correct, and we don't want to rock the boat or say the wrong thing or make anyone think that we might be someone radical or all of this programming that's been put into people. We're simply not in our divinity, folks. Everything about this system is designed to squash human divinity, squash the divine feminine, squash the divine masculine, squash the whole thing, and get people to comply with rules which do not serve us. And all we have to do is step into our moral compass and change the world. Just say no. Now, ask questions, ladies and gentlemen. You know, when we look at the past and look at all this stuff and look at where we're going, I mean, I don't know how anybody could accept this as being anything positive at all. This whole 5G future they want to lead us into, this whole smart prison we seem to be being forced to embrace, and we don't want it. It doesn't serve us. It doesn't serve humanity. It doesn't help us. All it's going to do is support the psychopaths who are running the system, and this is the end game, folks. The smart system is the end game, and when you look at the society we had, look at what Tartaria was, and look at what we had on this earth, it becomes incredibly apparent just how far we've been led from what it means to be human and just what we are capable of. And it also becomes apparent just how easily we could change things, you know, with a simple shift in perspective. You know, and I guess that's what's so hard about it. That's why it's so difficult, because people don't want to shift their perspective. People don't want to think outside the box that they're trained to think in. They just want to support their preconceived notions of things. People don't want a real dose of reality because it may mean they'd have to think about things. It may mean they have to actually take a little bit of responsibility for the situation the world is in. And unfortunately, people think that to change the world, we're going to need this huge, big, violent revolution. I mean, I don't really think that we do. I think we could change it by a simple change of perspective. I think we could change it in a day by simply changing the way we interact with the people around us. But nobody wants to do that. Everyone's looking for political remedy. Everyone's waiting for Q to come and save them or Trump to change the day. How people can think there's going to be any remedy in politics is really blowing my mind. I mean, so much of the truth community has simply embraced the state since Trump took office, and it really is remarkable to see. And I don't know how anybody can look at this system and believe that there is any political remedy that will ever be found. The only remedy to this system is going to be human beings becoming human again, reconnecting with what it means to be human and putting that into practice in their everyday lives. And if we're not prepared to do that, then nothing is going to change, ladies and gentlemen. We're just going to get led further and further into this machine culture. Yeah, and with the whole thing, you know, so many people don't want the machine culture. So many people don't want 5G. So many people don't want the smart system. So many people don't want the Internet of Things. They don't want all of this smart system that's coming online. But at the same time, while they don't want any of it, they're still using their cell phones. They're still taking their smartphone with them everywhere they go. And the smartphone is the system. The smartphone is the new world order. Stop using your smartphones, folks. They didn't exist 10 or 15 years ago. We didn't need them to live our lives, so we don't need them to live our lives now. Put them down, folks. Put the smart tech down. Start shopping with cash. Pull yourself out of this smart system by not participating in it yourself, and encourage everybody around you to not participate in this smart system. If the government is going to roll the smart system out, then sack the government. Do it in every country. They're all criminals anyway. Get them out of power. Put them in a prison or on Christmas Island or somewhere where they're out of public way, out of any position where they can cause harm to the public anymore, because they're all parasites and we don't need any of them. And when they roll this legislation out, just say no, ladies and gentlemen. One big collective no, and we will change the world. But we have to remember to use that word occasionally. You know, we just seem to have forgotten the power of that word. I think it's about time we revived that word, folks. It just simply isn't used enough. But I think we are getting very close to the end of the show here, folks. I'm going to have to leave it there for now. As I've mentioned to you previously, I'm going to be speaking on the Gold Coast here. It's the 24th of August. I'll be speaking on the Gold Coast at the Paradigm Shift Summit in Surfers Paradise. That's been held at the Mantra on View in Surfers Paradise. If you go and search Paradigm Shift, you will find the conference, I'm sure. You'll find links to the conference and you'll find how you can buy tickets and all that sort of stuff. I'm also going to be speaking in Philadelphia on the 17th of September. That is at Anarchadelphia. You will find a link to that on my website. If you use the coupon CROWHOUSE to get yourself a ticket to that, you'll get a discount on your ticket purchase. I'm also going to be speaking at Anarchapulco in February. That was in Acapulco, Mexico. If you take the link to the Anarchapulco website from my website, thecrowhouse.com, you use that link, you'll find that you'll get a 10% discount on your ticket to Anarchapulco as well. So that's something worth doing as well. As always, thank you to the many people who send me so many kind emails, to so many people who leave so many positive comments on my channel. It's really wonderful to get the responses that I do from you, and I am working at responding to many of the emails. Actually, I'm getting quite a few done each week, so it's been very good. I am getting to yours soon if you haven't got a reply yet. And as always, I would like to thank all of my Patreon supporters, the people who support me on Patreon. You are the only people who keep the show on the air, ladies and gentlemen, and I cannot thank you enough for that. And that is really what keeps me going. You know, even when sometimes I think, you know, I've just about had enough and I want to give up the fight, I just can't do it because of the people who've supported me over the years. I can't allow these people to have wasted that effort and that time and that energy that they've spent in supporting me. Yeah, it does really inspire me to keep the message going, because I feel like I owe it to the people who've supported me for so many years to keep this message going, and that's one of the reasons I will just never stop, and I'll continue to push it out there because it really does need to be done. And thank you for giving me that inspiration. That is it for me, folks. I'll have to leave it there for now. We're now completely out of time. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.